You're listening to the Hour of the Dark, our new time in Arizona. Same time everywhere else where they change time. And the madness continues. The government of Yugoslavia has initiated a unilateral ceasefire. They're not shooting at anybody. And they want to sit down and discuss an end to this. But William Jefferson Hitler and the Nazi NATO SS forces say, hell no, we're going to bomb you into the Stone Age. We're going to bomb you until you do exactly what we tell you to do. Your history. What do you think about that? And again today, they showed proof of Serbian massacre of Kosovars. They showed pictures of dead bodies laying in brilliant summertime green grass. Again, same pictures, but this was supposed to be new evidence. ladies and gentlemen, the tail is wagging the dog. And it's almost shaking that poor dog to death. This is madness. This is insanity. If this is the United States of America, I am not a member. I don't belong to this insanity. Will not, cannot support it. I condemn it. In fact, condemn it. I condemn all those who participate in it. I don't care who they are or what their motives are. This is insanity. Great heroism being displayed in Yugoslavia. Students and professors from a Belgrade college have linked arms across the bridges in order to try to save what bridges they have left across the Danube River and one other river. The name escapes me at the moment. Also, they've been drumming up the plight of the refugees, telling us what a terrible thing it is that they're being forced from their homes. Are they being forced from their homes? Today, they gave a report that the Serbians were not allowing them to leave Kosovo, but were trying to get them to go back to their villages, and somehow this has become a crime. This stinks, ladies and gentlemen. I can smell it in Arizona. It stinks. It really stinks bad. And what about these polls? All across America, on every single radio talk show that there is, no matter who is the host, nobody is supporting this war. Nobody supports sending ground troops into Yugoslavia as combat troops. Yet the government comes out now with a poll, and so does CNN, the little parrots, the little propaganda communist news network parrots, are parroting this poll that says 55% of all Americans support sending ground combat troops into Yugoslavia. How can this be? You would think at least one supporter of such a move would be calling in to radio talk show hosts and CNN and C-SPAN. But it's not happening. We have a communications center here, folks, and we can monitor. We can monitor the major radio talk shows all across the country. And we do. Ask anybody who lives here in town that's ever looked up this hill and see the array of antennas that we have. Nobody supports it. So, where are these people who have been polled that support sending ground combat troops into Yugoslavia? Who conducted this poll? And, well, you know the rest of the questions, don't you? You should. Standard fare around these parts, partner. Don't go away. I'll be right back. We'll take your phone calls. And then later in the broadcast, I have something that I want to read to you that will open your mind. I don't want to do it right now because there's too many people still at work. Since we moved back an hour, especially here in Arizona, too many people still at work. And I don't want to read it until after the top of the hour so that people who are at work, especially here, will be able to hear it. So don't go away. I'll be right back, and we'll open the phones, 520-333-4578.
Never in women's history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
I think that's supposed to be odor, isn't it?
The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. I heard something. I happened to listen to a little bit of Limbaugh's radio show today when I was traveling in my car, and I heard something about an unconfirmed report. Something about 19 dead Americans or something are going to be secretly brought back in caskets. Or
we talked about that last night. It is not confirmed. It was in the Greek and Turkish newspapers and apparently on their news broadcasts yesterday. As far as I know, no one has confirmed it.
Okay, I didn't hear that on your show last night.
It was there.
Okay, that's it.
Okie doke, thanks.
Thank you.
520-333-4578 is the number. We're taking your calls after the top of the hour. I'm going to deliver some information to you that you all need to hear. I think it may wake some of you out of your slumber, especially those of you who think that somehow what's going on is okay. It's not. Won't ever be. 520-333-4578 is the number. Phone's open. We'll be taking your calls until the top of the hour, and then we will not be taking calls for a while I impart some important information to you. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi. With respect to those 19 bodies, there's a report in Truth and Media. I just saw this. I don't know anything about the source, but the Truth and Media by the Jerkspec or whatever his name is says that they report actually 50 dead bodies and 10 downed planes. 50 dead bodies shot down in 2 helicopters on the 1st of April around Mount Terra. but I have not been able to get confirmation of this either.
That all comes from the same source. It was all printed in the newspapers in Greece and Turkey yesterday, and apparently on their news broadcasts.
Is there any way to... And what they said about those... Okay, so you saw the stories.
Yes, I saw the stories, but how can you confirm it when the United States government and NATO both deny it? So it doesn't do any good to keep repeating the same thing over and over again when there's no confirmation. There is no proof that this actually happened, and I don't know why the newspapers would print it if it didn't happen. But at the same time, the newspaper stories and the Greece and Turkish news broadcasts did not supply any documentation or proof of their allegations.
Do you think there is anything to be said for the theory that Clinton is starting this war just to get people killed? Literally to reduce the world population?
No. We've already discussed the whole reason for this. It's all about world government, nothing else.
You were on, I just got onto the station 2 days ago. I'm very glad to find you again. It's been quite a while since I listened to you.
It's about world government, and absolutely nothing else. Nothing else has anything to do with this other than world government being able to exert its will over sovereign nation states and forcing them to comply with whatever they say with the world police force.
Do you know anything about the...
Which I said years ago would be NATO. I said that years ago. The world police force would be NATO.
Do you have any info on the reformed UN charter?
The what?
The UN's reformed charter, which they're just... getting ready to approve now?
Well, I don't know if they're getting ready to approve it or not. It's not approved until it's been introduced, debated, and voted on by all the member nations of the United Nations.
Right.
So it is not the United Nations Reformed Charter. It is nothing right now.
Right.
And that's all I can tell you about it. It's just like if somebody introduces a bill to Congress, it means nothing until it's passed. But if you want to take a look at it, you should be able to find it amidst the documents at the United Nations website.
Yeah, I've been looking around. So far, I haven't really scored on that, but I have been looking for it.
Yeah, keep looking. You'll find it.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. 520-333-4578. Those of you who have been listening to this broadcast for years, I told you all of this would happen years ago. Years ago. Not yesterday, not last week, not last month, but years ago. And it's unfolding exactly as I said that it would. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to change the subject, but I just wanted to ask you if you had heard about the Supreme Court decision.
Yes, I have.
That seems to me to be a very major step in the loss of our Fourth Amendment freedoms.
Absolutely, it's total crap. Just because some guy's speeding... now the police can make everybody get out of the car, can search all your belongings, your pockets. They can even strip search you. They can search the whole car. No probable cause that anybody's committed any crime whatsoever. The guy just went 10 miles over the speed limit.
In the past, you have stated that normally the Supreme Court makes the right decision.
Normally, throughout history, they have supported the Constitution, except in some... unusual circumstances, but as a rule, they usually rule according to the proper intention of the founders when they wrote the Constitution.
So you would agree in this case they haven't ruled properly?
Oh, in this case, they just threw the Constitution right out the door.
Right.
They can't search anybody according to the Constitution unless they have probable cause, and unless they have met the requirements of the Constitution, which they have to have a sworn statement from somebody that you've committed some kind of a crime. They have to have a warrant, and the warrant must be issued and signed by a judge.
It's my understanding that my car would be one of my personal effects.
It is.
So,
if you're living in it, it's your home.
Did the court give any reasoning for this decision that you're aware of?
No, not that I'm aware of. They probably did. They always do. They always put out their opinions, either the ones that voted for put their opinions why they voted for it, and the ones who dissent usually put out a paper saying why they dissented.
All right. On another topic, yesterday you stated that the England is subservient basically to the United States.
No, I did not. I never said England is subservient. England is a sovereign nation.
Okay,
But they're a third world, third rate nation. They are a socialist nation. They have no power like they used to. They're not an empire. They don't have a huge military force. And they generally do what Washington, D.C. tells them to do.
Okay.
That's what I said.
In that respect, as far as the country itself goes, but as far as the wealth and power of the House of Rothschild and the House of Windsor, and say the organizations such as Freemasonry and the Rosicrucians, Knights Templar, etc., would you say that they still have power in that respect?
No, because those people are not exerting power as England. They're exerting power toward world government. They don't give a damn about England.
Okay, as far as exerting their power in world government affairs, would you say they're still the major power?
Yes, the Illuminati, the top people of the heads are the higher degrees of all of the fraternal orders, not just Freemasonry, but all of them, and known collectively as the Illuminati, yes, exert tremendous power. And I would say that they are the power to reckon with in the world.
Okay. And as far as Russia sitting on the sidelines for the moment, do you expect them to raise the ante and somehow get involved? And what do you think it would take for them to get involved?
Well, I think they're already involved. I happen to know that they are supplying the Yugoslavians with weapons and equipment and supplies. I don't know the degree or the amount of the resupply, but it is being carried out. It is ongoing. They have sent one ship down into the Adriatic Sea. They plan to send six more. Every day their rhetoric gets more and more dangerous. And you have to remember that there is a huge faction in Russia that would like to depose the ones who are trying to go along with westernizing Russia and bring back the old Soviet Union, and it's a very powerful force. So there could be a coup in Russia, and if there is, watch out.
All right, but specifically, do you see us taking any actions that might precipitate more direct Russian involvement?
I think we're already doing that every day.
Okay. So it's just a matter of continuing.
I think everything that we've done is absolutely the most stupid, pathetic, ridiculous, dangerous things that this country has ever done in its history.
Well, I agree. All right, I'll let someone else call it.
Okay.
Thank you.
But anyway, that's my opinion for whatever it's worth. 520-333-4578. Nowadays, my opinion is probably not worth very much. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. You remember about a week or two ago when this whole bombing started, there was some kind of conference on the BBC. I think it was the Air Commodore and some other guy. I don't know if you saw it, but there was one guy that asked why one of the MiGs that was shot down. They asked why it had English writing on it. Is there any reason why that could be?
Well, maybe it wasn't a MiG.
Well, the guy said it's because it was an export model.
Well, so what? Where was it exported to? It was exported to the Serbian Air Force.
That's what makes me wonder. A Slavic-speaking country exports a MiG to another Slavic-speaking country.
Do you think the Serbian Air Force speaks English? I don't think so.
I don't know. I've never heard of them exporting any MiGs to any English-speaking country. Why would they rewrite it in English?
Well, that's a good question. That's my question.
Makes me wonder about that. Did you see that conference?
I didn't see the conference. I saw the pictures of the wreckage. I saw the English writing on the plane parts myself.
Oh, you saw
it? And I reported it that night on this broadcast.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
I didn't hear you that night.
Well, you know, almost every caller didn't hear me. Almost every night. I wonder how the reception is skipping around like that.
Well, I'm trying to get a hold of the broadcast sometimes, but with the mountains around here, sometimes the propagation is very poor.
I understand. Shortwave is that way anyway. It's just the nature of shortwave, and this particular station sometimes comes in gangbusters in some areas and not very well in others, and then the next night it just switches for some reason. But as we roll into spring, reception should get better everywhere.
Yep. I'm looking forward to getting some good crops in this year for spring. I'm going to stop buying food from the stores and start growing my own, I guess. guess it's about time I learned to do that.
Good for you. It's healthier, it'll taste better, and you'll enjoy doing it. There's a great satisfaction in eating what you raised yourself.
Yep. Have a good one, Bill. I'll let somebody else have a chance now.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. 520-333-4578. Generally, if there's something to hear, you'll hear it first on this broadcast. And that's, you know, that's been the case for many years now. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is a brief piece from an academic book. It's a textbook about nationalism that might help some of the fence sitters out there realize that it's not that there are people in academia who know that the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia has been intentionally destabilized.
Oh, yes.
It's by a gentleman named Craig Calhoun, written in 1997. It's called Nationalism. He worked in Ethiopia and actually was somewhat helpful, I guess, in helping the Eritreans become a nation. But anyway, he says here on page 61, he says, but Christopher, referring to Warren Christopher, was wrong. And I'll say that he's being kind to Christopher. Continuing, he was wrong on the facts, failing to notice Bosnia's long history of peace. He was wrong to miss the role of cynical manipulation alongside sincere, if extreme, nationalism. He was wrong to suggest that there was nothing outsiders could do at a time when the struggles were already being manipulated by outsiders and when the United States was supporting a discriminatory arms embargo. He was wrong to see Yugoslavia as somehow less than a, quote, real nation because of its recent creation and attempt to be multi-ethnic. So there's plenty of fodder for the idea that the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia is being destroyed by design.
Oh, absolutely. And what is happening here? In this country, they're telling us that everybody has to participate in multiculturalism, yet it's wrong in Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? They're intentionally chopping it up into ethnic nations, which can only result ultimately in a war. It would be as if in the United States here, we had a black nation in the middle of the country and no blacks in the other states, but just in their own country there, eventually there would have to be a war. And it would be forced because of this kind of segregational activity. It can't go on. Someday the people of this world have to learn to live peacefully together.
Absolutely. And in fact, circa 1984, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia was providing a model of that until events...
Until the Marxist terrorist groups rose up and began to carve it up into ethnic enclaves such as the Kosovo Liberation Army, which is nothing more than a Marxist terrorist, drug dealing, a murdering a group of people.
Right. Well, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Good night.
520-333-4578. If you doubt that, stop listening to the talking head parrots on the Communist News Networks and get out there and find the truth. It's there for anybody to see. It's always been there. All you got to do is dig it up and read it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Turn off your radio.
Yeah, keep it right there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Bill.
Yes.
You listen to the broadcast there. So what is the solution to all of this stuff? What is the solution?
Leave them alone. Let them solve their own problems. What do you think would happen if all of a sudden some ethnic group arose up in this country, some Marxist terrorist ethnic group that was dealing drugs, started to cut a couple of states out of the United States and was moving just their kind of ethnic people into those states to build up the population? Do you think President Clinton would send NATO over here to help them succeed from the United States?
No, I don't.
No, he'd say, let us solve our own problems, wouldn't he?
The chips fall where they make.
You better believe it.
Hey, Bill, is it also true that the United States says shit? Britain says how much and what color?
Don't ever call this broadcast again. You hear me? You're a stinking little puke-faced jerk. Some people don't have any brains. You know, if you don't like this broadcast, why do you listen to it? Are you a masochist? Are you some stupid donkey? You don't have a mind of your own. You can't find a broadcast that you like to listen to. You're sick. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Ms. Cooper.
Yes.
Hey, I was watching the news tonight, and I saw something that pretty much disturbed me, you know, was the fact that, you know, they're talking about shipping these Albanians over to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Yeah, and put them in a concentration camp.
Well, I saw something tonight that literally, for the first time in my involvement in what I'm going to call the Patriot Movement, it sent shivers down my spine. It literally scared me. I saw a man that was headed for a bus, and he turned around. This is on CBS News. He turned around and said, "My family, my family." And the man behind him said, "Get on the bus." I don't see any difference between this and what happened in Nazi Germany, you know?
There's no difference whatsoever. And what do you think they're going to do to these people when they get to Guantanamo Bay? That's a United States Marine Corps base. You think they're going to put them in the barracks and let them shop in the PX and walk around and do what they want?
No, they'll be closely guarded with M16s, I'm sure.
They will be in the same concentration camp that they put the Cuban boat people in. In the same tents, using the same latrines dug into the ground, and they will be guarded by the United States Marine Corps personnel 24 hours a day, and they will not be allowed to go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah, it's a bad situation, you know, but I thought I'd call and tell you about that if you hadn't seen it, because it was something that really shook me.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you see it on TV for yourself, you know, it's a lot different than just reading it.
Sure.
When it's in a contemporary context.
Also, people are being forced at gunpoint to get on airplanes to be relocated.
Yeah, I hadn't heard much about that, but I saw the thing about the buses, you know, heading out to get them somewhere to an aircraft, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome.
You have a great day, sir.
Thank you for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. Yeah, folks, you're all up in arms because maybe the Serbians, see, you don't even know if this is true or not, but maybe the Serbians are putting some of these Kosovars into concentration camps. And then you're applauding the United States government for taking 20,000 of these people and putting them in a concentration camp on a Marine Corps base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The same concentration camp where they put the illegal boat people who escaped from Cuba not too long ago. Remember that? Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. This is Dragan Gavrilovic from New Jersey.
Hello.
I accidentally found your program, so I got fascinated yesterday, but I was too late to call you. I'm a Serb, you know.
Okay.
I was so thrilled to hear you talk nice about Serbs, because nowadays everybody is crucifying us.
Why wouldn't I talk nice about Serbs? They've been one of our greatest allies. If it wasn't for the Serbs, we may have lost World War II instead of won it. And a lot of our pilots would have been captured by the Germans.
Yeah. But nowadays people forget what happened in the past, you know. About these camps in Guantanamo and Guam, are they taking whole families or just men to train for going back fighting Serbs?
I have no idea. Now, what we see, what they're showing us on the Communist News Network, which we can't believe because they've lied to us so many times, is men, women, and children. And in some cases, it appears that families have been separated, and some are being forced to stay behind, and some are being forced to leave. But I haven't heard anything about taking just men. If you know something about that and can provide some documentation, I would certainly be interested.
No, I don't, but I suspect something, you know, because, you know, they first closed Macedonian borders and then they opened. And I suspect that they are taking people, especially in Germany, for example, 40,
that's certainly a possibility. Yeah. But until we find that it's true, we can't say that that's what is happening.
No,
what makes this broadcast...
That's why I ask you if you have any idea.
No, no.
About this also, for example, you can see when they call these people Kosovo.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such nation as Kosovo.
I know that. And the only reason I use it is because that's the only thing that the listening audience really understands. They know that I'm talking about people who lived in Kosovo, whether or not the name really applies. And of course it doesn't.
No, but you see, they have every one of them identifies as an Albanian or Shqiptar.
Yes.
They call themselves Shqiptar.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And that's how they call. Now, here, when they say Kosovars, it looks like, because they fight, or armed fight against Serbs, started really because they were promised separation from Serbia, and then they visualized the big Albania.
Yes, and many of them... Yes, and many of them were intentionally relocated from Albania to create an ethnic imbalance in that particular region of Yugoslavia.
Yeah. But this was also reason for taking their autonomy out was because of their misbehavior.
Yes, it was because of the Kosovo Liberation Army and their terrorist activities.
Yeah, but it was going on for a long, long time.
Yes, it was. The only thing that we're interested here in is truth. We're not interested in supporting wrong deeds or wrong actions. We're not interested in propaganda. We're not interested in the manipulation of peoples in order to create world governments or anything else. We're interested in truth, and the whole philosophy of this broadcast is that until people in the world begin to live their lives according to the truth, it's not ever going to be a good world to live in. I have too, but because I'm an American.
Well, I'm American too now.
Yeah.
But still, in my heart, you know, where I was born, that is where my heart is more than anywhere else, really. And forgive me for that, but that's how it is.
Uh-huh. I understand that.
I cannot hide it, especially in time of trouble now.
Yeah, I felt the same way. You see, my father was a military officer in the Air Force. He was a pilot. And so I lived all over the world, and I was born in Long Beach, California, But I all I could remember was just snatches of, you know, sunshine and flowers smell, you know, the air smelled like flowers and beautiful parks and things like that. And so I had this tremendous love and feeling for Long Beach, California. And for all of my life, I wanted to go back there. And when I finally went back, the city had, it was a retirement community when I remembered it. And all of these people were old folks who took care of everything and gardened and took care of their houses and their lawns. And then they all died, and there was no young people. And when I went back, the city was just, was no place to like, believe me.
It's not the same, huh?
No, it was not the same. So sometimes we harbor this this feeling of belonging and loyalty to places that that really we shouldn't. And I don't know why we do that, but I do understand that feeling, and that's why I told you that little story. I understand it perfectly.
Well, that I can connect very well, because the same feeling I had when I brought my family after 20 years. In 1966, I lived there for a while in London, where I learned English, and I used to go to Brighton. And I loved Brighton so much. It was so beautiful, beautifully painted, you know, light blue and white, all the buildings and beaches and everything. So I brought my family in 1986, after 20 years, to see such a beautiful place. And when we went there and I saw all these neglected and painted peeling off, and oh, it was so terrible. I regretted for coming here.
Yeah,
things change. But concerning this situation, Bill, I can provide you really with evidence that behind all things, nothing will happen in Yugoslavia without Germany.
I don't understand what you mean. What do you mean without Germany? You mean with
Germany is, you see, Serbia has central position in Balkans. Around Serbia, there is Hungary, Romania, there is Bulgaria, Albania, Greece, and all this. And so, Serbia was the first one to liberate itself against Turks.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was, it was like a Piedmont of Balkans, you know. Everybody was looking up on Serbia.
Yeah.
And especially Serbia had fantastic relations with Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And they chased Turks from Balkans to get there. And all this, you know, that's the history. But in First World War and in Second World War, Germans had very, very hard time over Serbs. And they never forgot this nor forgave this. And what happened when...
Well, Germany's the one that started the war. Why should they hold grudges against Serbia when they are the ones who invaded... the Balkans.
You don't know, Bill, in First World War, where my father and my uncle were fighting, they spent, both of them, 11 years each carrying arms.
Uh-huh.
And what happened, you see, when Austria declared war against Serbia and attacked Serbia, Serbs let them enter to practically the center of Serbia. They were treating and letting them come. And then, when they went into counterattack, it is a nice saying, Kaži Strina, gde je Drina? Tell me, auntie, where is Drina River? That's how they were leaving their guns and everything and running out just to flee alive. It was a massacre. Terrible massacre of Austrian army.
Uh-huh.
And then they got a German division, and then they were much stronger. And Serbia was...
Well, even though they were much stronger, the Serbians kept over 20 divisions of the what was then acknowledged as the greatest military force in the world, busy for the whole period of the war.
That was all guerrillas.
Yes, I know. I'm well aware of that.
You send three men, and they position them at three different places, and they start shooting, and they go with whole divisions and
Yeah.
It was this kind of hit and run situation. And then breaking bridges, railroads, and all this, you know, this all kind of things. But this time, you see, in 1991, I want to finish this. 1991, when disintegration of Yugoslavia started, Germany was first to recognize Croatia and Slovenia, and the Serbs immediately, governing from Belgrade, proclaimed Fourth Reich was born.
Well, weren't the Croatians the allies of Germany during the war?
Yes. Yes, Utah.
Yeah. Well, before it's over, they're going to lose more than money, I think.
For this, Germany paid, up to 1991, $770 billion marks, which is at that exchange for $556 billion. Compare this with Marshall's plan, $13 billion only. Take in account inflation, say 10 times, 15 times, whatever you want, it's negligible compared to what Germany spent to integrate Yugoslavia. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And this is all documented in London's Economist.
Well, you have to understand something. When Germany lost the war, and Germany was partitioned between East and West Germany,
yes.
Russia... Nothing happened in East Germany without the control and the permission and the pulling of the strings of Russia. And nothing happened in West Germany without the control and the permission and the pulling of the strings of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah.
And the Central Intelligence Agency still controls Germany today. I can guarantee that. Germany doesn't do anything that's not manipulated from Washington, D.C.
I don't know.
Yep. What the United States does when they take over a country, when a country is beaten by the United States, they only put their lackeys in charge. Now, even in South and Central America, even though most of those countries have never been at war with the United States controls the governments of every one of those countries.
That I know.
And the real reason that Manuel Noriega was arrested had nothing to do with drugs. He was not involved with drugs. He said no to the United States of America one too many times.
Yeah, I hear this. That's true. But how do you then look at this just Noriega situation? This fascinates me so much. Man was caught. Really.
Yes, he was. The head of a nation who has diplomatic immunity. It's against international law.
That's true.
And we invaded his country with no provocation whatsoever, just like we're doing in Yugoslavia. The only thing is that, and the only reason I say that Yugoslavia is the only one that we've really attacked without provocation is because there is a question of whether or not Manuel Noriega declared a state of war between the United States and Panama because of the aggressive behavior that the United States was presenting toward Panama.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he didn't. The United States says that he did.
Yeah, but still, put him on trial here under our laws. In country where he did not commit crime, if he committed crime against the United States.
You don't understand the United States justice system. The law does not apply if you're a political prisoner. They make up the law as they go along. It's a lot of people. We have more people in prison in the United States per capita than any other nation in the world, including communist China and including the Soviet Union when it was at the height of its power. Did you know that?
I know that the prisons are pretty full. But also...
Not only full, we're building new prisons every day in this country. because prisoners are slave labor.
Where?
Right here in the United States of America. They're manufacturing products that are being sold to the public. Did you know that?
They do work.
Yes. Where have you been? You've been listening to CNN, haven't you?
No, I have not no other choice but to listen to what's so open.
Yes, you do. You have a lot of other choices.
What's the choice?
CNN is nothing more than the same propaganda arm for the United States of America as the propaganda ministry under Hitler run by Joseph Goebbels.
Well, I know that the truth is very scarce.
Truth is not only very scarce, this is the age of deception, and you're damn lucky if you can find any of it anywhere. But anyway, I've kept you on here much, much too long. And the reason I did is because...
Thank you very much, and continue good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for calling. Yeah, I suggest all Americans get off their butts and investigate what's going on with the prison system. How come, in this country, we have more people in prison per capita than any other nation in the world? Wow. How about that? And most of them are in there for things that 20 years ago you couldn't even think of arresting somebody for. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Jackie calling from Nashville.
Hi, Jackie.
How you doing?
Good.
I just want to share a couple quick things. The Waco, the Rules of Engagement is on cable this month.
April the 19th on HBO.
And there's a Senate document, it's called Report of the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency, and it's 93rd Congress, November 19th, 1973,
uh-huh.
And it states that since March 9th, 1933, the U.S. has been in a state of declared national emergency.
Yeah, we've done whole broadcasts on that document and the consequences of what it means.
Okay, I didn't know. I just want to share that just in case.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right.
520-333-4578. That's right. March 9th, 1933. The Emergency Banking Act. When the banks were closed for 3 days, actually 2.5 days, I think. And President Roosevelt enacted or coerced Congress into passing emergency legislation, which did bad things, still doing bad things. Gave the president the right to create law, as a matter of fact, in the form of emergency. Our presidential... emergency orders, or executive orders is the word I'm looking for, executive orders. Good evening, you're on the air.
Good evening, Bill.
Yes, sir.
This is Bob from New Jersey.
Hi, Bob.
How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good.
Okay.
What can we do for you?
Well, we've got ourselves in a mess over there in Kosovo. Kosovo, I'm sorry. I'm not for good with the...
Costco is a discount store like Walmart.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, I think they're both owned by the...
It's a real mess over there, and I call them the Three Stooges, basically. Between Clinton, Marilyn Albright, and Cohen, nobody really knows which direction to take. They just keep, you know, we'll go this way today, this way tomorrow, and it doesn't seem like they're really getting anywhere.
Yeah, Hitler, Goebbels, and Goring, isn't it?
If you want to make that comparison, yes, I would agree 100%.
The only comparison I can make today, if Hitler isn't the personification, or if Clinton isn't the personification of Hitler in modern times, then I don't know who in the hell is.
Well, basically, my friend, I don't know either. But one thing I wanted to mention to you, not your show per se, but shortwave radio, through the dial, I keep getting these people that have been hit by either the ATF or the IRS or any alphabet soup agency you want to mention that basically they've taken my cars, they've taken my house, they've taken my gold, they've taken this, they've taken that, they've done this, they've done that, whatever.
Yeah, it's happening all over the United States. I don't understand why everybody's so mad at Milosevic. I mean, we've got they're doing it here.
Well, my problem is this. they can't take anything that you won't let them take, my friend.
Well, that's true. That's why they haven't taken anything from me.
I understand that. But that's what I'm trying to
they'd like to. They'd like to, and if they ever try, the only thing they'll ever be able to take is my life.
I understand your position, and I understand where you are, and that's what I'm trying to get across to you, my position. And I can't get, maybe I'm just not smart enough, but I can't get through my head. I feel what I have is mine. If you want to take it, then you're going to have to come take it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to take it by coming in here and saying, we want to take this and we're going to take it, and so on and so forth. You're going to have to take it by force.
Yeah.
And I just get tired of, you know, I hear this all day long where this has been taken, that's been taken, this has been taken, that's been taken. As far as I'm concerned, if it's been taken, you let it be taken.
That's exactly correct. I've been telling people that for years. If you don't want to be a slave, you have to stand up and say you can't enslave me. And freedom must be something you're willing to die for. If you're not willing to die for it, you can't have it, and they can take anything they want. Your children, your car, your house, they can put you in prison, they can do anything they want. If you're not willing to stand up and fight and die for freedom, you cannot have it. You will not have it. It cannot be yours.
You are 100% right, because I've had those people come here to my home, and I told them, not today, not tomorrow, not next week. If you want it, you're going to have to do a little better than come out here and tell me that you're going to take it because you feel like taking it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to come out here and take it by force.
Well, good for you.
And they left, and I haven't seen them for, about 18 months, I guess.
Well, you will, eventually.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be back.
Just like I will.
I'm sure you will too, my friend.
But I'm willing to die for freedom, and I understand something that almost nobody else does understand.
And by the way,
that
I'm telling
you. Excuse me. This is my broadcast, and when I'm talking, you're going to have to let me speak like I let you speak when you're talking, okay? You have a bad habit of doing it.
Yes, sir.
My position is that, and I've learned something throughout my life that most people have not learned. And that is, if you really understand God and you have a spiritual understanding about God, then killing me even makes me more free than I could ever be on this earth, even in the freest conditions. And so that's why I'm not afraid to die.
I would have to agree with that 100%.
Now it's your turn to talk.
Okay. Only thing I wanted to mention to you. I know you were on the boats in Nam. I know you were there at Da Nang when the ammo dump blew up.
Yep, I was on the river, but not more than 200 or 300 yards at the most from the bridge right there where the dump is.
I was about 2 miles from there, and I'm sure we drank in some of the same places in Dog Patch, if you know what I mean.
Probably did, yes.
Okay. Have a good evening, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yes, if you know about Dog Patch, you were definitely in Da Nang. 520-333-4578. Dog Patch was a place you weren't supposed to go, that on any given night, everybody was. Or at least a lot of people were. 520-333-4578 is the number. If you want to get your call in, get it in now, because after I do the station break at the top of the hour, I'm going to go into something else, and I'm going to be busy with that, and we're not going to be on the phones for a while. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get through this, but it's something that everybody has to hear, and I'm going to take as long as it takes, and I may dwell on some of the issues that are brought up in this piece. if I feel that it's necessary. It's pretty clear, but, you know, sometimes people have to hear it twice or have it explained in order to really understand it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, say, you said you were raised in the Air Force.
Yes, I was an Air Force brat.
So am I. And my dad was a full general
in
the Air Force. I had a brother that was a major in the Air Force. I had a younger brother that fought in Vietnam. And
excuse me, you need to turn your radio off.
We had a Lieutenant Cooper at Barksdale Field in Shreveport, Louisiana, when my dad was commanding officer there. That wouldn't be your family, would it?
It may have been. My dad was at one time certainly Lieutenant Cooper.
I'll be darned. Well, it's a small world. I didn't know you were Air Force brat like I was.
Yeah, in fact, I went to Narumasu High School in Grant Heights outside of Tokyo and graduated from Yamato High School. I lived at Tachikawa Air Force Base in Grand Heights. I lived in Lodge's field in the Azores, and we lived in a lot of places, I can tell you.
I'll be darned.
In fact, for most of my life, I did not spend very much time in this country at all.
Oh, well, I got a funny for you that will be a good laugh from the military story, but it's true.
Okay.
We lived in Hawaii. This was before the Second World War in 1938. There was nothing to do over there except every dignitary that came to the island, they had a parade. And the boys would always have to get out and spit and polish and stand in the hot tropical sun and faint and fall down and everything because it was very tropical over there. And that's all they did because there was nothing to do before the wars came on. And coming back into Wahiawa, the center of the island, one day in this hot sun on the back of these trucks, these boys saw a sign that went by. It said, Jesus is coming soon. And one GI said, oh, my God, another parade.
Well, that's pretty good.
Laughed about it because that was all they did was parade over there.
You know the place that I lived most in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii.
That's where I lived.
I lived there for 8 years while I was in the Navy. Was attached to submarines and ships out of Pearl Harbor, and I did my shore duty at St. Pat Fleet.
I'll be now. I lived at Wahiawa, in the center of the island.
Yeah.
My dad was stationed at Wheeler Field, which was the Air Force part.
I know exactly where all of those places
Schofield Barracks
are. But you said something that confuses me.
What?
You said there's nothing to do in Hawaii.
Before the war, for the military, you know what I mean. They just had, every time a dignitary came to the island, the military had a parade.
I see. Yeah, okay.
Plenty of beaches and, you know, Waterloo Beach on the back side of the island and Waikiki and the Punch Bowl and all the things to see over there.
I never had a second that I wasn't busy doing something and just enjoying the hell out of every minute of it.
Oh, I know. We loved it. We lived up in Wahiawa, the center of the island.
Uh-huh.
And we rented from a man by the name of Shintaku, and he later became the senator or the congressman of the Hawaiian Islands.
Mm-hmm.
That was Shintaku, our landlord. Small world, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, very nice talk to you. I had no idea that anyone was around.
Yep, that's me.
Oh, I'll be done.
And something else that might surprise people. When I was a sophomore in high school, at Grand Heights, attending Narumasu High School, I had a radio show on Armed Forces Radio Network called Radio Teen. And in the evenings, we had a radio studio in the Grand Heights Teen Center, and I broadcasted and played rock and roll music for all the teen centers and all the bases in Japan.
I'll be darned.
And so that was kind of a harbinger of years to come.
I went on and did Broadway shows and sang and danced in them for 13 years. And then I toured the country with a jazz band for 33 years. I was a drummer in a comedy jazz band, toured the country for 33 years.
Well, I'll be darned. I wish that I could have heard your band.
Yeah, it was called Frankie Nan and Company out of Rochester, New York.
Did you ever make any records?
Oh, Frankie Nan, yeah, we did. We made a lot of records, but they're on old 78 and stuff that's not around anymore.
How do you spell Frankie Nan? You'd be surprised what I can get.
Huh?
How do you spell Frankie Nan?
N-A-N.
N-A-N or M-A-N?
Like you're going to say Nancy.
Oh, Nan.
Frankie Nan, and his last name was Lomenzo, L-O-M-E-N-Z-O. And his younger brother, Carter became Secretary of New York State.
Okay, and Frankie is F-R-A-N-K-I-E or Y?
Yeah, F-R-A-N-K-I-E. Frankie Nan, N-A-N.
Okay. Yeah, you'd be surprised what I can find in music world. You
really?
Just, yeah.
I'll be done. I've looked for the Clark sisters that used to sing with Tommy Dorsey because I knew them personally in New York City, and
yeah.
They could make great records, and I play them on the radio station in Dallas, but I can't find them anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I can get stuff that nobody else can get. I just know where to get them. But anyway, I've got to let you go. It's top of the hour, and we've got
to
move on.
I'm talking to you from Stanford, New York right now.
Well, thanks for calling.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. Folks, get ready, because right after this music, I'm going to read something to you that you all need to hear, and you're going to be amazed at who wrote it.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Draw out your arms. Let the stepmom pass through. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, think of the fact.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. That's the good stuff and keep with your toe.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across the land, and Clinton saying hit the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar right, Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Incite black and white program agitation.
Don't resist. You're surrounded by the UN in white and gray, the ATF, the men in black, of the one world order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilation. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip. National ID, debit cards, yeah. Vaccination biochip, milk carton kits, genetic engineering. Clinton says her health plans for you and your own good. Sure. And Adolf Hitler's Robin Hood. Masonic mind manipulation. Inciting riots is crisis creation. Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is a test for all of us. So I have today just one simple request. A comprehensive package of health care benefits that are always there and can never be taken away. Never be taken away.
Now that's scary.
Social illusion. Media hype. Plan confusion. Masonic religion. It's a liar. Got you praying for a Luciferian Messiah. The Illuminati thinks that they're enlightened, that they're to be the gods of Earth, born of incest from the sons of Satan and their sisters in satanic birth. Hidden agenda, Kissinger, Nixon, Ford, and Bill, while your kids out back smoking crack for some cheap thrill. They numbed us down and dumbed us down with fluoride TV drugs, the NEA, and public schools. They've taken your brightest and our best and made them public schools. With managed media, brain-bending lies and stealth, the banksters stole your wealth. Johnson, Bush, Carter, Reagan, Gore, and Dan, they've all been pushing pipe, the sonic master plan. Rhodes Scholar Oration. Clinton speaks, then rapes the nation. Luciferian subjugation. New World Order Illuminati coronation.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I played you the soundtrack from Panama Deception on this broadcast not too many nights ago. If you were listening, you heard it. If you were not listening, go and rent the videotape or purchase the videotape. Spend money on this tape. It's worth every penny of it. Find it. It's entitled Panama Deception. Watch it. Listen to it. Those of you who were listening that night on this broadcast know what we did in Panama, and you know that it was wrong. And you know that we killed thousands of civilians in that attack, that invasion of a sovereign nation state, to arrest the head of that state, Manuel Noriega, bring him back to the United States and try him on drug charges. If you read the transcript of the trial, you'll find that he was railroaded. Manuel Noriega was not involved in the manufacture, the importation or exportation, or the sale of drugs, or the dealing of drugs of any kind. Manuel Noriega was the head of the nation of Panama. He was, to all of my research, a Marxist socialist who was trying to bring independence to Panama and give some kind of a decent life to the really poor people who lived in that country. I do not believe in Marxism or socialism, and politically he and I were at odds. But realistically and legally, he was right, and the United States of America was wrong. Now I'm going to read you a letter written to the permanent mission of the state of Bahrain, from the permanent mission of the state of Bahrain to the United Nations, dated September the 30th, 1998. Now listen to this very carefully. I have a stack of documents that support everything that is said in this letter, but I can't deliver all of those documents in an hour, nor will I take 2 days or 2 hours or more than one broadcast to do this because of what's happening in Yugoslavia today. So this is written from the permanent mission of the state of Bahrain to the United Nations. Dear Ambassador Hassim Mohammed Bouali, a six-person delegation organized by the International Action Center traveled to the Sudan earlier this month, primarily to examine the damage done by the United States Tomahawk cruise missile attack on the capital. Included in the delegation were two Arabic-speaking medical doctors, persons experienced in assessing bomb damage, and photographers. We conducted an unrestricted examination of the principal target, the El Shifa pharmaceutical factory, which was completely destroyed. It was hit by many missiles. Plant personnel and investigators fixed the number at 17. From a physical examination of the El Shifa property, it is clear beyond question that the plant was engaged in the production and packaging of a wide range of pharmaceutical products in capsule, powder, and liquid forms for both humans and animals. From hours of inspection, we determined that every visible part of the premises had been devoted to pharmaceutical processing, testing, production, packaging, storing, or shipping. Our visual observations were confirmed by interviews with the executives of El Shifa, its plant managers, technicians, laborers, and victims of the bombing who stated without exception or qualification that the exclusive activity in the entire facility was devoted to pharmaceutical products. A review of documents, including architectural and construction plans, equipment and raw materials purchases, and business records, further confirmed that the plant was engaged in the mass production of pharmaceutical products to meet the urgent needs of the Sudanese people and livestock, and for limited export to neighbors with similar needs. We found also, and beyond question, that the El Shifa plant was known internationally. Its plant production and products were well known to United Nations agencies, including the World Health Organization, to the diplomatic community in Khartoum, including the ambassador of the United Kingdom, who, with other diplomats, had visited the plant, to heads of state who had been escorted through the plant on state visits, and to medical and health care leaders from many countries. The plant was the flagship of the Sudanese medical products industry and a source of national pride. It is incredible that the United States Secretary of Defense and the President would not have been advised that they were targeting a well-known pharmaceutical plant. The plant was completely destroyed by the missiles along with a large inventory awaiting shipment. The plant was programmed to provide the drugs most needed by the people of the Sudan. Thus, while it produced about half of all drugs consumed in the country, it provided up to 90% of the drugs used to treat the most common causes of death, particularly the increase of malaria and tuberculosis, and the expanding need of drugs for rehydration and hepatitis, and several antibiotics, plus serums to treat worms and liver flukes in camels, cattle, sheep, and goats. The pharmaceuticals produced in El Shifa were sold at prices which averaged about 20% of the prices of the same products on the international market. With government subsidy, 15% of the production was distributed free to the poor. Few in the Sudan can afford the high costs of foreign pharmaceutical products. We found that El Shifa was the single facility in all the Sudan most important in the provision of medicines to protect the lives and health of the people. Its destruction, far beyond the direct injuries from the missile attack, will have disastrous results, costing thousands of lives and injuring many more for want of needed medication unless replacement drugs are found immediately. While it is a matter for separate consideration, it must be noted that the United States has targeted the Sudan as an enemy for a decade. It has subjected the Sudan to verbal abuse, quote, a viper's nest of terrorists, end quote, said Secretary of State Madeleine Albright in 1996. Unilaterally frozen assets, economic sanctions, and the United States has financed, supported, trained, and supplied military incursions and violence in the South in the tradition of the Iran-Contra scandal. Attached are two recent articles and an editorial from the New York Times on the United States raid on the Sudan. It is imperative that the Security Council do its duty under Article 39 of the United Nations Charter to investigate and confirm these facts to its own satisfaction immediately. The appearance of Security Council indifference will itself threaten peace. This use of highly sophisticated and deadly missiles against foreign nations by the United States must be stopped now. I had hoped never to see another crater ripped in foreign soil by a United States missile like the many I had seen in Iraq in 1991 and 1993. Yet here, at El Shifa, three such craters were found where the missile did not strike reinforced concrete. The same phenomena was visible at the nearby candy manufacturing concern, which was totally destroyed. The Security Council must act now to prevent this unilateral assault on nations and their people in which the United States government acts as judge, jury, and executioner. First the punishment, then the trial. It is imperative, as well, that the Security Council demand that the United States assume responsibility to provide pharmaceuticals to the Sudan on an emergency basis, in amounts at least sufficient to replace the inventory and future production destroyed until the Sudan is able to again produce its own. The United States must also compensate the victims of this assault for all personal injuries and losses and destruction and damage to property. The Security Council must not let this criminal use of military power by the United States continue. It is a threat to world peace. No country will be free from the fear of assault or its possible occurrence while the United States is unrestrained in the use of its omnicidal arsenal. Sincerely, Ramsey Clark. Now, you all know who Ramsey Clark is, don't you? If not, I'll leave you to look it up. That's your homework assignment. And now this. You know, I could sit here and read documentation and letters and results of investigations and research into what the United States has been doing to other countries for many years and prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt that the United States is the big boogeyman of the world today. Now, listen to this. This was written by Congresswoman Helen Chenoweth. Congresswoman Helen Chenoweth. It's entitled, Our Illegal War. Our Illegal War. And here's what she has to say. I want you to listen very carefully because this is very important. When the order was given for American military personnel to attack Yugoslavia, it was not issued following a declaration of war from Congress. Nor was the order given by the President as a means of repelling a sudden attack on America by a foreign aggressor, or as a measure intended to rescue Americans abroad from unexpected peril. In fact, the order to attack Yugoslavia didn't even follow the pattern set in Korea and Vietnam, in which our nation was committed to protracted foreign wars through unilateral presidential action. On March 23rd, the order to commence hostilities was given to an American general by a Spanish Marxist, NATO Secretary General Javier Solana. I have just directed the Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, General Wesley Clark, to initiate air operations in the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, announced Solana, who insisted that the attack, quote, is intended to support the political aims of the international community, end quote. Congress played no role in defining those political aims, which means that the American people, in whose name Congress is empowered to act, were not permitted to play any role in the decision to commit our nation to war. In the run-up to our war with Yugoslavia, Congress was permitted by its leaders to carry out an impotent Let me read that sentence again. I screwed it up. In the run-up to our war with Yugoslavia, Congress was permitted by its leaders to carry out an impotent charade of debate. On March 11th, the House approved a non-binding resolution endorsing the use of American troops to enforce a peace agreement between the Yugoslav regime of Slobodan Milosevic and secessionist leaders in Yugoslavia's Kosovo province. On March 23rd, just hours before Solana issued the order to begin the bombing, the Senate approved a resolution supporting the military campaign. But Clinton administration officials, including the president, had by that time made it clear that while they sought approval of the military action from Congress, they did not consider it necessary for Congress to authorize the military strike on Yugoslavia. A few senators seemed to understand the constitutional implications of these actions. Senator Don Nichols, Republican, Oklahoma, pointed out, quote, if we start a massive bombing campaign, we're going to war, end quote. Senator Ted Stevens, Republican from Arkansas, described the prospect of waging an undeclared aggressive war upon Yugoslavia as, quote, a precedent I don't want to be involved in, end quote. Even more pointed were the comments of Senator Pete Domenici, Republican, New Mexico. Quote, I say shame on the president, end quote, declared Domenici, momentarily forgetting that Bill Clinton has repeatedly demonstrated that he is incapable of shame. Quote, if this is such an important matter, why couldn't the President trust the United States Senate and United States House and ask us whether we concur, end quote. In order to appreciate the depth of the administration's deception regarding the war over Kosovo, Now listen carefully to this. This is a congresswoman. In order to appreciate the depth of the administration's deception regarding the war over Kosovo, it is necessary to understand that the war was authorized by NATO long before the bombing began on March 24th. The day after the war began, the London Telegraph reported that General Clark, NATO's supreme military commander, received his activation order for hostilities last October. The order was the official moment when authority over the forces to be used was transferred to him from the top brass of the member countries supplying them. The Supreme Commander does not need new permission from politicians or diplomats whenever he wishes to change tactics or increase or scale back operations. At 1:43 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 24th, with American bombers en route to Yugoslavia, and just minutes before the first explosions were reported on the ground in Kosovo, White House spokesman Joe Lockhart explicitly admitted that the power to take our nation into war had been surrendered to a foreign official, namely the NATO Secretary General. Lockhart was asked by correspondent Helen Thomas, quote, "Who gives the green light on this now? Is it the president himself or the supreme commander of NATO?" End quote. Lockhart replied, "The supreme commander of NATO acts on the authority of the political leaders of the NATO countries, and he has that authority." In brief, the power to declare war in Kosovo was exercised by NATO Secretary General Solana. The power to make war was given to NATO's supreme commander. The President of the United States played the role of selling the war to the public, and Congress was tacitly told that its duty was to rubber stamp the decision to take our nation into war and to authorize payment of the resulting expenses. "No power but Congress can declare war," observed Daniel Webster in 1846. But what is the value of this constitutional provision if the president of his own authority may make such military movements as must bring on war? The administration's actions in committing our country to enforce, through military action, diplomatic initiatives in Kosovo presented Congress with a fait accompli. The only recourse left to Congress was to defund military deployments to which the administration had previously committed our country. But the political will for that is not evident. Unfortunately, the majority in both houses of Congress have abdicated their responsibility and have acquiesced in the usurpation of their powers. The passivity of the House in allowing Bill Clinton to carry out an illegal war is particularly galling in light of the fact that the same body impeached him last December for much less serious crimes. Under the Constitution, explained Alexander Hamilton, it is the province and duty of the executive to preserve to the nation the blessings of peace. The legislature alone can interrupt those blessings by placing the nation in a state of war. By surrendering to a series of executive usurpations, those of Bill Clinton being the most brazen, Congress has abandoned the separation of powers and embraced in its place a version of Führerprinzip, the leader principle, in which Congress meekly endorses the decisions of an imperial commander-in-chief. Kings had always been involving and impoverishing their people in wars, pretending generally, if not always, that the good of the people was the object, wrote Abraham Lincoln in 1848. The royal war-making prerogative, which permitted one man to commit his country to war, was regarded by our founding fathers, quote, to be the most oppressive of all kingly oppressions, end quote, Lincoln explained. For this reason, the statesmen who gathered at the Constitutional Convention of 1787 resolved to so frame the Constitution that no one man should hold the power of bringing this oppression upon us. James Madison's notes from the convention record the care with which the founders assigned the power to declare war to the legislative branch. This was done, as George Mason of Virginia noted, for the purpose of, quote, clogging rather than facilitating war, end quote. At the initiative of Madison and Elbridge Gerry, the original language authorizing Congress to make war was changed to the power to declare war, thereby, in Madison's words, leaving to the executive the power to repel sudden attacks. In an April 2, 1798 letter to Thomas Jefferson, Madison further elucidated the reasoning behind this careful assignment of powers. Quote, "The Constitution supposes what the history of all governments demonstrates, that the executive is the branch of power most interested in war and most prone to it. It has accordingly, with studied care, vested the question of war in the legislature." End quote. Alexander Hamilton, who favored a strong executive branch, observed in the Federalist No. 69, and I quote, "The President is to be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States. In this respect, his authority would nominally be the same with that of the King of Great Britain, but in substance much inferior to it," end quote. Where the power of the English king, quote, "extends to the declaring of war and to the raising and regulating of fleets and armies," end quote, Hamilton explained, "the authority of the United States President, quote, amounts to nothing more than the supreme command and direction of the land and naval forces as first general and admiral," end quote, after the declaration of war has been issued by Congress. After the declaration of war has been issued by Congress. The text of the Constitution itself, get it out and read it, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen to what she's telling you. Listen carefully. I've already told you this, but a lot of people don't believe me. They have to hear it from someplace else. The text of the Constitution itself, Article 2, Section 2, specifies, quote, "The President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States," end quote. In other words, Commander-in-Chief describes a specific and limited role played by the President. Rather than Congress having a Commander-in-Chief before which it must prostrate itself, it has, in the President, an executive it may entrust with delegated war-making authority. It bears repeating that in the Kosovo War, the role of Commander-in-Chief, by the administration's own admission, has been assigned to NATO's Supreme Commander, who exercises, in Hamilton's words, the supreme command and direction of the land and naval forces, called into service by Secretary General Solana. Perhaps, given Mr. Clinton's own history of loathing for the military, personal cowardice, and bottomless corruption, it is of benefit to the morale of American servicemen fighting in Yugoslavia to know that it is General Clark who serves as their Commander-in-Chief. Nevertheless, this arrangement gravely undermines the constitutional mechanisms designed to protect our liberties and national sovereignty. In my remarks to the House of Representatives during the March 11th debate, I reminded my colleagues that nothing in the laws of the Constitution suggests that a determination by the United Nations Security Council or by the North Atlantic Council, NATO's governing political body, is a substitute for a congressional declaration of war. Furthermore, by making war on a sovereign nation, NATO acted in violation of both its own charter and that of the United Nations. The North Atlantic Treaty states that NATO will, quote, "refrain in its international relations from the threat or use of force in any manner inconsistent with the purposes of the United Nations," end quote. The document specifies that NATO was created to defend, quote, "the territorial integrity, political independence, or security," end quote, of its members in exercising the right of collective self-defense recognized by Article 51 of the Charter of the United Nations. Whatever one thinks of the actions of the Milosevic regime in suppressing a secessionist movement within its own borders, it must be admitted that the Yugoslav regime did nothing to threaten the integrity, political independence, or security of NATO members. Thus, NATO's attack on that regime violated the alliance's founding treaty. Furthermore, NATO's commitment to act in harmony with the purposes of the United Nations requires that the alliance be bound by the United Nations Charter. Article 2, Section 7 of the United Nations Charter states, "Nothing contained in the present charter shall authorize the United Nations to intervene in matters which are essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of any state." The suppression of Kosovo's ethnic Albanian secessionist movement is clearly within Yugoslavia's domestic jurisdiction. Under the precedent set in the Kosovo War, America may find itself committed to military intervention in ethnic conflicts around the world. Should we attack Turkey to protect the Kurds, who chafe under Turkish rule? Should we go to war with China in support of independence-minded Tibet? Will United States planes attack Sri Lanka in defense of Tamil separatists or bomb targets in India on behalf of Muslims in Kashmir? The logic of the Kosovo precedent dictates that United States troops can be committed to war without congressional sanction anywhere in the world where atrocities are captured by the camera lens. The war in Yugoslavia, we must remember, was brought about by NATO's demand that Milosevic consent to the foreign occupation of his country by an international army, which would enforce the terms of an agreement intended to grant autonomy to ethnic Albanian rebels. When Milosevic refused to permit the occupation, NATO threatened to bomb his country and ultimately carried out that threat. Once again, the Clinton administration has been devastatingly candid about key facts. On February the 10th, in testimony before the Committee on International Relations, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, Thomas Pickering, confirmed that Kosovo is part of Yugoslavia's sovereign territory, and that an attack upon Yugoslavia waged because of Milosevic's refusal to allow foreign intervention would be nothing less than an act of war. It is a remarkable spectacle to see the Clinton administration and NATO taking over from the Soviet Union the role of sponsoring wars of national liberation. More remarkable still, and even more unsettling, is the fact that the beneficiary in the case of Kosovo, the so-called Kosovo Liberation Army, or KLA, is a collection of Maoist drug peddlers and terrorists who have been armed by Iran and provided with training and support by Saudi terrorist financier Osama bin Laden, who is the world's most notorious sponsor of international terrorism. When Bill Clinton, in an earlier crime against the Constitution, unilaterally launched missile strikes on Afghanistan and Sudan, he claimed that his target was the terrorist network operated by bin Laden. However, in Kosovo, Bill Clinton has committed Americans' military might to the support of bin Laden's Balkan allies, and the policy of the Clinton administration seeks the creation of a Balkan outpost for bin Laden's terrorist network. The New American was the first national publication in this country to document the KLA's narco-terrorist background. Quote, "Diving into the Kosovo Quagmire," end quote, March 15th issue. And I made this magazine's findings available to many of my colleagues on Capitol Hill. Although few U.S. publications have looked into the KLA's role in international narco-terrorism, the Times of London for March 24th, in a story published just before NATO commenced airstrikes upon Yugoslavia, reported that the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army, in the judgment of senior police officers across Europe, is a Marxist-led force funded by dubious sources, including drug money. police forces in three Western European countries, together with Europol, are separately investigating growing evidence that drug money is funding the KLS leap from obscurity to power, continued the report. A report filed on the same day by Steve Rodan of the World Tribune described how an autonomous Kosovo under KLA control could serve as a springboard for Iranian-sponsored terrorism throughout Europe and beyond. According to Western European security experts, wrote Rodan, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and some of their terrorist beneficiaries have exploited the fighting to establish a sphere of influence that spans from Greece to the Austrian border. NATO's willingness to go to war on behalf of Muslim ethnic Albanians in Kosovo could ignite insurrections across Europe, to which the KLA's terrorist sponsors would eagerly lend support. The concern of European strategists is that an Iranian sphere of influence would do greater damage to such Western countries as Britain, France, and Germany, reported Rodin. France has about 2 million Muslims, most of them poor and alienated. Britain has about 1.5 million. A European diplomat told Rodin, once these minorities feel they can obtain the support of NATO, we could see flare-ups everywhere. We could see flare-ups within our own nation as well, and the Kosovo precedent would justify military intervention by the international community to settle such conflicts within our own borders. Consider the case of the southwestern United States, a region referred to as Aztlan, the mythical homeland of the Aztecs, by such militant groups as the Brown Berets. Aztlan radicals have announced their intention to conduct La Reconquista, the reconquest of that region, through unrestrained illegal immigration, as well as subversion and violence. It is not difficult to foresee a future scenario in which the international community authorizes the use of military force in support of autonomy for Aztlan, in the same way that the war in Yugoslavia was launched in support of autonomy for an Albanian Muslim-dominated Kosovo. Had Congress performed its constitutional duty, all of these facts would have been rigorously examined before our nation found itself committed to an illegal war in Yugoslavia. We would have demanded that the President make his best case to the people's representatives in a formal request for a declaration of war. This would have given us the opportunity to require that he defend an alliance with drug-dealing Marxists bent upon promoting terrorism throughout Europe. Had Congress been willing to exercise a check on presidential ambitions by withholding funds for the envisioned military deployment, we would have learned in a timely fashion about the unconstitutional arrangement through which the power to declare war was delegated to a Spanish Marxist, and the power to make war was assigned to NATO's military commander. Had we acted with statesmanlike deliberation, we would have soberly discussed and contemplated the implications of the Kosovo precedent for our nation's future. It was our duty to do all of this before deciding whether or not to interrupt the blessings of peace by placing the nation in a state of war. Instead, Congress submitted to the usurpations of a corrupt, impeached president and made itself complicit in his crimes against our Constitution and our national sovereignty. Congress can reclaim the powers it has surrendered. Indeed, it must. If our descent into tyranny and the erosion of our sovereignty are to be arrested, but this will not happen until a critical mass of public understanding is reached and informed pressure is brought to bear. The actions of an imperial president can, as Lincoln warned, bring this oppression upon us. But only if, through our indifference, we allow those malign designs to flourish.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
a new world order. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it.
Now you may understand a little bit more about what's going on. You see, what Clinton has done is unconstitutional. What NATO is doing is against the NATO treaty. What Clinton and NATO are doing collectively is against the United Nations Charter. It violates every principle of law that there is. Period. And on top of that, in subverting the Constitution for the United States of America, William Jefferson Hitler has committed treason. Along with every single officer who is going along with his unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful orders. And it's not about anything other than world government. World government. If they can convince the sheeple of this nation and of the world to accept what they're doing as right, they can do it whenever they want, to whomever they want, including the United States of America. And in fact, we'll have cemented one more brick into the solidarity of the structure of the new world government. 520-333-4578. What do you think about what you just heard? If you heard it. 520-333-4578. Phones are open for the rest of the hour, which is just about 15 minutes. And we'll see what you think about all of this. If you think about all this. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill, this is the guy that was making the signs. I was just doing it today, this afternoon, in front of everybody going home from work. And, you know, I was out there for 2 hours. I had 2 people flip me off, but I had about 25 people stop and ask me questions about my signs. And they asked me, am I a militia member or some kind of freak? I said, no, I'm just a constitutionalist. And I had my copy of the Constitution right there. And I said, you know, the Nuremberg trials proved that you cannot follow wrongful orders. It doesn't absolve you because you were ordered to do that.
That's right.
One of those pilots over there should realize that. But, of course, they've sold their souls out to the New World Order.
Yeah, for the promise of a retirement check in 20 years, after 20 years.
Well, I guess that's living off the government tit, you know. But
that's it. That's exactly what it is. They're socialists.
Absolutely, and I think it's time for everyone just to stand on the street corners, make your little Yugoslavian flags and fly them, show these people that it's not the TV news that is covering this.
And put targets everywhere, especially in front of TV cameras. If you see it,
targets, I haven't distributed them yet, but I'm working on it.
If you see a TV camera anywhere, I don't care who you are, if you're listening to this broadcast, have targets with you. If you see a TV camera, get in front of it, hold your targets up. Hold them up so that everybody who's watching television can see.
Yeah, but one lady I was talking to, I said, did you see the news where there's, you know, they say there's 3,000, but it looks more like 30,000, and they're holding targets up.
Yeah.
She says, no, I didn't see that. I wouldn't realize that. I said, well, there's 30,000 people every day in Belgrade while the bombs are raining down, celebrating having a rock concert, and they're all holding up these target signs. This is a people with tenacity and determination that will never fall to any New World Order, anybody or nobody. They're not giving up the fight. we should not give up the fight either. We should look to these Serbian people and the fortitude and that they have and enthuse our own fight against the New World Order in this country to stand up against the fascists that are trying to take our country away. That Supreme Court ruling today where they can just search your vehicle for no apparent reason,
yeah,
just because the cop thinks that you might, maybe, if you could, if you would, maybe in the...
It doesn't matter. What they said is if he stops you for any reason, he can search everybody in the car.
Absolutely. I got a way to fight that, Bill.
I do, too. It's called a .45 automatic.
Now, this is even subtler. Rub the door handle on the outside of your vehicle with poison oak and always go in through the driver's side. The passenger side. Only rub the driver's side. When the guy gets it on his hand, disinfects him.
That's a good idea.
I mean, we got to start using this type of low-tech, you know, stuff for our own purposes. And, oh, yeah, everybody that goes and flies through the airport, grind up liver snaps in your pocket and distribute it throughout the airport so the drug dogs freak out and they fly to work.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Anarchy? No, just the Constitution.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for calling. No, folks, I drew the line in the sand a long time ago. Anybody, I don't care who it is, anybody who tries to take my rights away from me, infringe upon my rights, or subject me to any kind of enslavement or tyranny is going to get a bullet. That's all there is to it. I have drawn the line. I will not lay down and allow myself to be subjected to tyranny of any kind from anybody anymore. Period. I will not do it. I will obey the law. I will help to the limit of my ability to enforce the law, to make sure that the law is followed. But it's going to be the real law, starting with the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America, and everything under it must conform to its limitations or to its powers. And if it doesn't, it's not the law. I don't care what they say. I don't care who's saying it. Period. I will not support tyranny. Not another day longer. Not period. And I'm not afraid to die in the process of doing that, which makes me a pretty dangerous man. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. I would like to ask you several questions, then I'll hang up.
Sure.
Okay?
Go ahead.
First of all, is it not true that Clinton misled the public and the Congress to say he had proof that the government of Sudan participated in the bombing of the American embassy in Nairobi?
Yes, he absolutely lied about it. There is no proof whatsoever. He has never presented any proof. And everybody who has investigated the allegations can't find any proof whatsoever of those allegations. I don't know what the real purpose of it is, except that the Sudan is not going along with the New World Order. And anybody, you're going to find that out. Anybody who says no to the New World Order, like Manuel Noriega, like the Sudan, like Yugoslavia, are going to find themselves the target of naked, blatant, brutal force. Yes.
Okay. And also, is this not an NGO and they're demanding the head of the Sudanese government on a platter?
I don't know what you're talking about. NGO means non-governmental organization. Who are you referring to?
Well, the international. The Sudan is reporting that the most powerful international NGO in the world are demanding their head. Maybe I should put it that way.
Well, the NGOs that are one world government oriented,
mm-hmm.
For instance, the world Federalists, and many others, world socialist bodies, National Socialist Congress, or excuse me, the World Socialist Congress. Yes, anybody who bucks socialism, specifically world government socialism become their targets.
Also, how can, if Clinton is you know, cutting down on the you know, the ammunition and the guns and all the artillery that they need, and cutting on the so-called people to fight in the war, where and how is he able to put such force? And
he's not. He's not. NATO is.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm...
NATO.
NATO is getting this from where?
19 different nations.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good evening.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. 520-333-4578. For a while, the United States military was acting as the world police force. You can see it's shifting now to NATO. NATO will assume those duties that will be their new role in the new world order. And I said this years ago. I said it would happen. I did broadcasts on it, many broadcasts talking about that subject. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. This is Ray from Orion.
Ray, I need you to talk a lot louder.
Issue with the caller. Maybe it is an issue, maybe it isn't an issue, but the statement about the effect of what happens or how people conduct themselves when confronted personally with IRS agents, ATF agents,
Do you belong to any of those organizations?
Any of those organizations. The paramilitary.
Excuse me. Excuse me. This is my broadcast, and if you can't allow me to ask you a question, you can't be on it.
Pardon me.
Are you a member of any of those organizations?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I had direct exposure to these people in January 18th, 1990.
And
you can say that, well, I'd go for it if they were coming in the door. And if I knew then what I know now, I would, and it would be quite a stand. Here's the thing. You don't know they're there. You're a one man person out there confronting an army, and you don't know when they're gonna surprise you.
Well, wait a minute now.
You needed a one man war by in the middle of
What is the matter with you? I don't believe that if you're the target of one of these agencies, you don't know it. And if you know it, you should be prepared for them to come at any time, like we are here 24 hours a day. A rabbit can't run across this hill without us knowing it.
Well, I agree.
If you know you're the target of one of these organizations, what are you doing go to bed at night and not making any provisions to be able to protect yourself if they attack you during that night? That's irresponsible.
I didn't know that I was a target.
You didn't know it? You had no idea?
Absolutely
that they were investigating you?
None.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, what was incredible was, no, we're off the point, but...
No, it's right on the point, really, but go ahead.
Well, actually the ATF sold me guns, and they came to my house to get them back. For which... we had a serious tax issue.
What kind of guns?
Machine guns.
Well, what's the matter with you? You're dealing machine guns and you don't know that you're going to be a target of the ATF? And you're buying machine guns from people you don't know? Are you stupid?
This is a long story, Bill. I'd love to discuss this with you at some point.
I would, too, because I'd like to find out what was going on in your head when you were doing this kind of stuff.
Well,
somebody comes up to me all the time. One guy wanted to sell me a truckload of Stinger missiles. You know what I did with him? I picked him up by his scruff of his neck and the seat of his pants and threw him in the street.
10 years ago, all these parts were available over-the-counter at a gun show.
Doesn't make any difference. You know, and everybody knows now, and you knew then that it was illegal to own a machine gun unless you paid the tax.
But they call a 10-inch barrel a machine gun, and it's not.
They don't call a machine gun unless it's capable of automatic fire, no matter how long the barrel is. Don't try to play these word games with me. I know what the law says. A machine gun, if it's capable of automatic fire, is a machine gun.
Correct.
So you knew that if you were making a machine gun, no matter whether the parts were available or not, you had to pay a tax. And if you didn't pay a tax, you knew damn well that you were going to be a target of the VATF. You knew that.
I knew that at that point I fell within the purview of what they claimed to be their authority to tax me for my right. Now, how did they make my
right? We're not arguing rights. We're not arguing constitutionality. You knew that if you had a machine gun or built a machine gun or purchased a machine gun or somebody gave you a machine gun or a machine gun fell out of the sky on your head and you didn't pay the tax, you were going to be a target for the BATF if they ever found out about it. You knew that.
Well.
Didn't you?
I agree. Yeah, I guess I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you knew it, you should have taken the proper precautions. I believe, like you, that the second article and amendment to the Constitution protects our right to keep...
I didn't care about that, Bill.
Well, I do.
That was my right, and I just did it. I didn't ask them for permission.
Yeah.
And I don't regret not asking them for permission.
Well, I don't regret it for you either. But I do think it's irresponsible that you weren't prepared for the consequences.
I agree. And then part of the point that I was trying to make is...
Well, that makes you a man, because you agree. You understand that. That's good. That means there's promise there.
We need to understand that what this is they broke it down to a one-man war. They're going to come to your house when you're all alone, in the middle of the night, and you're unprepared. And you're going to have to stand up and within seconds make the decision.
Well, hold on now.
You should fight them?
You should never be unprepared, and you're damn right I'm going to fight them, and I will probably die in that fight, but I will take several of them with me. I guarantee you, and if I have enough warning, which I will up here, I guarantee you, I will take a lot of them with me. I will take so many of them with me that they will think twice before they ever do it again to anybody. And if all of us did that, they would stop it. They would stop this tyranny and these police state Gestapo tactics in this country.
And I kicked myself for not taking the opportunity to do that when I really had a chance.
Well, hindsight is no good now. But anyway, I got to go. We're out of time. I'd love to talk about this a lot more, but we're out of time.
Do that, but Bill?
We're out of time. I don't have any more time.
Bless you, my friend.
Thank you very much, and thank you for calling. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Please wake up. If you're not willing to die for freedom, you can't have it. So stop paying lip service to liberty and freedom. Put up or shut up. Understand, folks, I was not saying go out and kill people. I was saying defend your rights. Defend yourself. Defend your property. And defend it damn well.
can pass me by, but honey, nothing can ever change this love I have for you. Oh, you're the apple of my eye. Your cherry pie, and oh yeah, your cake and ice cream, and oh, your sugar and spice, and everything nice, you're the girl of my mind.